Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real-life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
So today I am joined by Alfred Jardy, and he is a property investor of the year, a business entrepreneur of the year. And Alfred, thank you very much for joining me. And yeah, if you could give yourself a little introduction, that'd be great.
Thanks, Noff. Well, thanks for having me. I know we've been trying to organize this as well.
Yeah.
It's a few days, but we're finally here. It'll be a good one for sure. Trust me, guys. So my name's Alfred Jardy. I am based in the West Midlands. I invest in property. I'm now more into business as well. And I guess we'll kind of deep dive into all these areas of how I've got to where I am.
So what a lot of people won't, well, they'll see a lot of your success on social media. And obviously we're going to be touching on branding, your success in property, now business.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always like that for you, was it? If we could take it back to your early years. What was it like for you growing up, and where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in a place in West Africa called Ghana. So when I was born in the UK, went to live with my grandma and auntie in Ghana until about the age of 11. And then I came back to the UK and then kind of started last year six, final months of year six in the UK, and then on to secondary school. But I grew up in an area in Southeast London called Downham. If you guys, you might know, I don't know if you know where that is, but it's like near Bromley, Catford, Lewisham, so southeast of London. And that was kind of where I grew up before going into, I did my secondary school, sixth form in that area, and then went to university in Hertfordshire, so University of Hertfordshire. That was my first time kind of, I guess, growing outside of London. Prior to that, it was like always London's all I knew. And then kind of got exposed to that world of being outside of London and the whole uni environment, being independent. So a lot changed from, I guess, being at home. Now living by yourself or with people, students, being away from home. So yeah, that was learning in itself.
So I mean, what was the home life like? What was the driving factor for yourself at home to be successful? Because there's not a lot of many people now. I mean, I get asked the question all the time, what drives you, what motivates you? There's not necessarily one thing, but it was a determined moment in my life, which I'm more than happy to share. But for you, what was that?
Yeah, so I think I've always aspired to build wealth at a young age. But I didn't really know, I just had that thought in mind, like, oh, I want to be wealthy young. Like, I don't want to be wealthy when I'm old. Can't really enjoy myself. So I want to kind of experience the wealth at a young age. And obviously coming from an African background, parents are kind of regimented on like, go to the best unis, get the best grades, get the best jobs. So that was the kind of the norm around in my environment. And obviously as I kind of start to kind of go to uni, speak to new people, get more exposure, meet new people from different backgrounds and stuff, my lens started to open up what's possible, what people are doing. And I've always been curious, like I've always looked and always asked questions. So I would see things and if I liked it or it motivated me or I liked what I saw, I would ask a question, how does this happen? How did you get to this place? Like, well, how did you arrive here? So I wouldn't say there's been from a young age. I think things have, as I just kind of progressed and got older, obviously things become more of a priority and you start focusing on other things more than when you're younger. When you're younger, you're just trying to have fun and trying to enjoy yourself. Obviously, you knew that at some point you need to have some sort of money to be able to do things. But it wasn't like a forefront of my mind, I need to make money. I just was trying to, at the time anyways, well, especially during uni, just get good grades and get a job on the back end and start earning some money, basically, that way. And obviously, kind of, you go into that and start to learn, there's actually more to life than just earning a salary. Especially if you're trying to earn substantial amounts of money. The corporate is a way, I think the route I took as a project manager was capped in the automotive industry. And I researched, and again, I didn't really research this onto, I think, two years into me starting my job, what my earning potential was in that role. So it's very silly. I feel like, why didn't I research what I could make during uni and kind of decide, even before uni, like during sixth form? Because sixth form is kind of where you kind of determine what subjects you want to study to then get the degree you want to do, and then that degree then lands you the job, hopefully is the plan. So why didn't I research what can I earn at that age? I look back and like, damn, I really wait to finish my degree. Imagine I did a whole degree and the most I could have earned was 50 grand or something like that. Like, I don't know, I would never have started a degree. Like, why 4 years of my life? I did a master's as well. So I did a straight master's, like a 3 year. If I'd ended it the 3 year, it'd have been a BEng, which is Bachelor's of Engineering. But if you carried on the extra year, it just got a Master's of Engineering. So I was like, yeah, 4 years to invest 4 years of my time into something where the earning potential was only 50 grand. Like, or in my case, the earning potential in the project management role that I want to kind of grow and flourish in, I'm looking at 150 maybe tops. And I'm like, for all this work, plus 5-10 years of working hard, climbing the corporate ladder. Anyways, at the time, that's what I knew. That's the information I had around me. So that's the decision. I made a decision based on that. I said, look, this clearly isn't the right vehicle. I need to find other vehicles. And that's where property came into the conversation. So yeah, that's...
I think a lot of people listening to that, there's a lot of points that I want to touch on. I just want to rewind back to when you was at school on a subject that's not often spoken about that I feel should be.
Okay.
Growing up in an area that was known for racism, did you experience any growing up through school?
So, yes, and yes, obviously, I think racism always exists. It's never like, it's always there, unfortunately. But like, I was always, I guess, my friendship circles and stuff, we always kind of were always close together. You want to go out, we'd be together. Like, I would never really be alone and stuff. Like, I went to school, like, the first day of my school, me starting this school that my parents thought, or I don't know what they thought of the school at the time, but this school was actually a really bad school that was being reformed. So Haberdasher is a good brand in terms of education, blah blah, but it was the first year of which they've taken over this school, which was notoriously known for like people that would just get into fights, just whatever, all the negative things you can think about, people in gangs and stuff. So the first day of school, and luckily they did something called, I can't remember what it was even called, it was like a pre going to your first year, or year seven, you had like a play thing for like a
it's like an open day, isn't it?
Yeah. So I got to make some friends. I was like, a good seven of us kind of like were friendship groups. When before going in the first day, we kind of knew who people were, or at least people we've made friends with on that, whatever it was, like just doing activities to kind of get to know people. And yeah, first day, we'd never believe this. So we leave, we're walking out of the school, and the older year, so the people in year 11, there was this fight going, like there was this gang fight. I don't know, it's like the whole guys, I don't know what even caused it, but they were all kind of with baseball bats, like sticks, marching down, because there was another school nearby, another school. So there's a school called Bonus Pastor, which is next to the school, which was previously called Mallory, but now it's called Haberdasher Knights Academy. So if you know, you're in that school, that's where I used to go. But yeah, it was insane. I've never seen anything like it. Like, these guys were just marching down, fuming, like ready to fight anybody and everybody. We were just kids, like at that age of probably 11, 12. There's just grown-ups just marching down the road, a bit scary, but I was with my friends. I was like, okay. And it was clear, they went after us. So it was like, okay, they were just marching that way. Let's just keep quiet and just make sure that they don't catch their attention. But yeah, no, it was a different environment. But being in that environment just made you street smart. Like, you, in the area I was in and people that are around, there's all these gangs around and kind of getting onto bad things and stuff. Like, I always feared getting in trouble with my parents. So like, I'd been from African family, you just don't want any kind of like limelight on you for anything bad. So you always kind of just uphold the family name, make sure you aren't getting yourself into trouble, so you don't have a headache at home as well. So for me, I've always kind of kept a good friendship groups. Obviously, I knew bad people, like, would do bad things and stuff, but like, I would never be mixed up in that, like, that's that's them. I know of them. We know, like, you have to build a relationship with those guys. Cause if you're not, and they just feel like they can bully you or something like that, and you're 100% gonna be taken advantage of. So you have to kind of have that acknowledgement, like, oh, we know each other, cool, keep moving. But not be affiliated in that way, like, where you've seen me hanging out with them on a spot or whatever somewhere. But yeah, the environment wasn't the best, but it shaped me to who I am and how I guess I operate and stuff and how I do things.
And again, like, you're doing bits now, you're creating moves now a lot. And it just shows with the coping mechanisms that you put in place there.
Yeah.
And for people that are aspiring to be someone like yourself or other people that could potentially be going through a similar thing, which no doubt they are, can implement your coping mechanisms and others, and they should certainly reach out to someone like you. Let's touch on what you're doing as well now, because I know that you are, by following you on social media. What is it that you're doing to help?
So, at the moment, I'm trying to, like, for me, I want people to get exposed to stuff. So, like, I document. People ask, why do you document so much? And the simple reason is people from my background potentially don't even know this stuff exists, like, what's possible. So when some people don't even know my background is that. Like, they probably thought, oh, this guy's gone to maybe some good schools and he's not really been in any type of... I've seen guys' heads smashed on the curb, bleeding. I've seen people getting smacked, but I've seen all knives. I've seen everything. So street smart-wise, I am, and I've been around people, so I know how to operate.
And I think that's what people need to hear. They need to hear the real truth behind who you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To then understand, okay, if you can do it, I can do it.
100%. But as well, like, in that environment, it's like, it's hard because some people do really feel like they're trapped. When you're from a background where there isn't even, like, exposure to how to even build wealth, like, all you glorifies wealth is people that make music or in a rap game, or are talent, so footballers, in the sports, athletes, those are the ones that kind of make it. You don't really hear, like, some of my friends are still kind of in, they're not in those social networks, but they're still not, like, places where I would consider from a place, still haven't kind of exited, they're still...
Would it be like your project manager role as a cap? And it's very hard for them to get out of the role, if you like, of you being stuck in a project manager.
Not even that. That's I would even say that's even a higher level. Like, I'm talking about even lower than that. Like, just there's still friends I have. It's just, there's still my boys, some people I grew up with, went to school together. Like, I've known them since I was 11. Like, they're still really good friends of mine. I still, like, go out with them and stuff. But what I'm trying to say is, I feel like because then they're in this environment and they're capped to what they think is possible. Obviously, they see me, but... See me, like, obviously they admire all that stuff, but it's still different because they're not surrounded with me every single day. Like, I see them once in a while, like once every 2-3 months. Someone's birthday, we might catch up and we'll see each other and I'm like, oh, how's things going with you? But it's like when you're in an environment where everybody's at a certain level and they're doing certain things, that's all you know. Like, you could day to day, that's even what you speak about. Whereas me, I'm in different rooms now. Like, conversations I have are like in the multi-millions, like, but they can't even fathom that. Like, they can't even... They're not thinking, they're still thinking like, oh, how can we increase our income? They're still at that stage, which for me, I'm trying to still expose and share light on like what's possible. Like all these speaking engagements, I do podcast interviews, like showing that it's possible. I've come from a background where some could argue, yeah, you shouldn't be where you are. Like, how did you get to where you are? But again, for me, I've just always been curious. I've always wanted more. I've always never settled. Like, people could argue, oh, 40 grand starting salary at Jaguar Land Rover, you're a great company, great brand name. And I used to even hate when people were like, oh, my dad was like, oh yeah, the son works at Jaguar Land Rover. Like, it just used to cringe me out. Like working at Jaguar Land Rover is not like the top of the pyramid. Like, so what's the excitement? Like, don't get me wrong, I was grateful to get a job. I'm not to say I wasn't appreciative of the role at the time. When I got a job, I was excited to say I'm working for this company. But mate, after like a year, like the buzz is gone. Okay, I'm now only in reality, I'm still earning 40 grand. How do I make 100 grand? Like, how do we level up? So it's, I think just coming back to the point, it's just some people unfortunately are in a certain environment. It's so hard to escape because you're so used to the environment, you don't even know to just explore. Like, even just get out of the city. Like, just, I've got some friends, I've never left London. That I just have no interest. Like, London's the place to be. I'm good where I am. I don't see why I need to go to Manchester. I think uni allowed me to travel across the country and see other places.
Does it come back to where your what I alluded to earlier, your upbringing, and where how your parents taught you, how they your home environment, is it again? Because if you're brought up in London, again, I'll refer to myself. I was brought up in Essex.
Yeah.
Moved around in the whole of Essex, to be fair.
Yeah.
And then I haven't left, but they'll kill me for saying it. I have done the best out of my whole family.
Okay.
But obviously I've got three children. I think we're similar ages. So different paths.
Yeah.
But selfishly, it is quite selfish. I've decided to go on the business and the property journey.
Yeah.
Whereas the others have decided to go the complete other way, which is similar to what you're describing here of we're going to stay, study, go to work 9 to 5, 40 grand a year.
Yeah.
That's not me.
Yeah.
I can't do that. But you have to, in my opinion, cut that off, sacrifice. But it's very hard. It is very, very hard. I mean, but how do you do that? How is it possible if you're brought up in an environment where you're constantly being told, no, stay at home, stay with your family?
Yeah, I feel what changed for me is exposure. So being in new environments, like I always say, look, you can't expect your current environment to change the way you are or the way you think. So how else can you do that? You have to go and explore other areas. Mm. Like traveling, even just traveling alone, that opens your mind. Because if you're fortunate enough to be able to just get a glimpse of like wealth, i.e. going to nice places, just nice venues, nice restaurants, you start feeling like, damn, like I want to be doing this every day all the time. Like this feels nice. Like there's a certain energy that you get from just doing like having great experiences. And it's not like the material things. I'm just talking about like just having a villa and getting a chef come and prepare a meal for the family. Like just a little experience in it. That's a bit extreme, but even some say that's an extreme, but like,
I don't think that is.
Yeah, but it doesn't, but for the others, they don't even expose to that. So like, that's like, wow. Like you have to be like, you probably think you have to be a millionaire to do that. So it's the mindset. And it's like what they know. They don't know anything different, but their current environment. Their current environment doesn't show them how things is possible and what it actually takes to do these things. So for example, like this is a perfect example. So like, business class, first class tickets. Some people do actually pay the premium price, 8 grand, 9 grand for that seat. But some people don't even know that. Some people are just doing it. They've got a business that they spend a lot of money through it and they get points, and therefore they're pretty much paying like £800, £1,000 to get a business flight ticket. And because they perceive to be in a business class, they assume already this guy had to spend that high level of money. But that's not even the case. Like there's clever people, a lot of people sat in the business class, whatever, first class flights, aren't even paying a fraction of what you probably even paying cheaper than what an economy seat is because of the points that, because they have this business that has mm-hmm. the expenditure, and therefore they're just racking up points on these credit cards, and that gives them the discounts on the flights. And that's a trick in itself, and people won't even know that. They'll think, oh, I need to serve my hard-earned money to spend 10 grand and this business owner is just spending £800 on the seat. So just again, you don't know what you don't know. So you have to get in those environments whereby people are kind of opening your lens on what's possible, how things are being done. And I feel like there needs to be a level of curiosity from yourself as an individual.
Yeah.
If you're not curious and you're just sat at home and you're comfortable, feet up, come back from work, tired, watching football. Like, I don't watch football. I make money now. Like, and I still don't sit down. I'm like, listen, unless I can afford to pay for a box, 50-100 grand a year at Manchester United, I'm not watching some guys earn 200-300 grand a week on the screen at home when I know I'm not even in the same level as them. And that's, I guess, a standard I've set for myself. Someone could argue, oh, but you need to take time out. I do take time out. I take time out. Me taking time out doesn't mean I need to watch football. Me taking time out could be me watching a documentary about how someone's sold £100 million business. That's me taking time out. Like, so I'm different from the point of view of I'm always in search of how people have made it to where they are. Because I know if I can find those little pieces, I can implement stuff in my business, in my life, which gets me to where they are. And honestly, success does leave clues. You just got to pay attention and be curious enough to want to know how someone's done it.
And I think it's important to note on that as well, what you just said there. You'll never forget where you come from. And I think what people seem to have in their mind, well, have this in their head, is that if you're successful, you're going to forget all the other people around you and where you came from. That's not the case. In any person or any successful person I've ever met, they always remember where they came from and the people that have helped them along the way.
Yeah, 100%. Like all my friends, like I'll probably say my true friends are friends that I went to school with, who I'm still friends with now. I still meet up with them. We still keep in touch. Because like everyone else that comes afterwards is like, they might, you don't, everyone's got an agenda, like they're using for something or you just, whatever. So it's like, yeah, those guys I'll never forget, but so I try and inspire them. That's why I document so much. I'm like, yo, you guys, you guys really, really know me. Like these guys, some people are coming to see me for the first time thinking this guy, he's got these properties, he's doing really well, got awards. They're just seeing me from that point. They haven't seen me. This might be a shock. I have done warehousing jobs. I was an Arsenal steward at one point. I was doing catering. I was doing a wine waiter. I went to this all during my uni days. People probably wouldn't put that against me. They'll think, oh, this guy is...
Well, no, that's what I've not even spoke about the property. Because it's there for everyone to see.
Yeah, yeah.
But really, I want to know you. People want to know you. And obviously, you are documenting. But
yeah.
That's why it's so interesting. And now you've said it, like, wow.
Yeah, people never, like, I don't think I've publicly said it. Well, if people that know me about know this, but I don't think on a podcast, maybe no. But yeah, I've done all this. Everyone complaining, I have a shit job, I'm earning low salary. I'm like, look, I've done that. I was very good with my money. I managed my money. I didn't overspend. And I think it's from my background, from where I've come from. I grew up in Africa, in Ghana, and I've seen like true poverty where nobody even, don't even know where their next food is coming from. Like even light is a luxury. A phone is a luxury. Having a phone, laptop, these things that we just take for granted, heating, this is all a luxury. Like people kind of just wake up in this day and they think, oh yeah, this is not the norm. There's people that don't even have a roof over their head. They're just sleeping somewhere. Do you know what I mean? And so it's like, we said this earlier on the podcast. I'm very, I guess, I don't want to waste things. I don't want to waste, whether it's money, I'm not wasteful with things. Mm. So it doesn't matter if I had £1 million, £10, I know how to manage that. And I will stretch that as far as it can get me, as opposed to thinking, oh yeah, I've made it, so I'm going to start splurging. No, I'm not that guy. I've never been the one to splurge money and all that stuff. But I do spend money on access to information, getting the right rooms, all that stuff. I'm big on that because that's what's allowed me to become who I am, and that's allowed me to open my lens of what's possible in this world by getting into different rooms that I'm currently in. Do you know what I mean?
So again, I've not been exposed to some of the stuff that you have. Certainly what you've just touched on there in Ghana. However, I've been homeless twice.
Damn.
Which people are probably fed up with hearing on my podcast. But I would imagine the degree that you've seen in Ghana, your home country.
Yeah, yeah.
It's completely different. It is completely different. I can't even begin to imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Trust me. Like some people just. I feel like when if you're, and this might be a harsh statement, but it's a reality. If you're in a developed country and you're complaining about whatever you're complaining. Trust me. You have, in my opinion, you have no right to complain. There's people, I'm telling you, there's people out there that don't even have access to a phone to even be able to search, how do I make money? Like,
that's what I'm just about to ask. Do you think people in this country are actually lazy?
Yeah, it's the honest truth.
Yeah.
On like, you're given so much opportunity. I'm like, why can't you make something of yourself? You have all the resources available. I don't care how hard labor, shit job you're earning, whatever's going on, stuff going on. Mate, everyone has a tough life. You can find someone. Like I said, yourself, you've been homeless twice, but you're still successful. You've done what you need to do. You've worked, you've grinded. So I think it's on everybody as an individual to want something, to want to get something out of this life. And you are the only person that can control it. I don't care what circumstance you're in, what background. Mate, it's people that have been to prison, come out, done amazing. So any story, any whatever situation you're in, there is someone on this planet that has had the same situation as you and been able to figure out a way out. So I hear it, but I don't hear it at the same time because I'm like, look for the information that gives you the willpower to say this is possible. And if, like I said, if you're in a developed country, that's like free. Some people have to go and pay money to use internet. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that. If there's a phone in your hand that you can literally type whatever you want to type, search what you want to search in your fingertips. So there's no excuses. So that's why I always say I don't feel sorry for people that complain and say they are in a tough situation. I get it. Like I've been in tough situations. Like I was the one that was, I barely made any money. You heard the job that I did. I've done all the shitty jobs. I've walked miles to not have to spend money on transport or whatever, just so I can manage the money I have around me. So it's like, I've done all the hard things. So I know like bottom of the barrel poverty to ultra high net worth now. I've I've been Grant Cardone, spending 25 grand on 2 days to be around multi-millionaires, billionaires, learning from them, because I want to be like them. I'm trying to become like them. So it's like, I need to spend time investing, whether it's myself, education, information, to become like them. So I'm going to do whatever it takes. I don't make excuses. Life is hard. We have shit weather. I get that. Government's like, I even made this point about how everyone's focused on the economy. I'm like, look, you don't actually even have an economic problem. You have an income problem. Because I know people that are still making millions in this tough economy, prices are going up. They're still making millions, if not even billions. So clearly there is an economic problem. It's you have an income problem. So address that and not worry about the government. I couldn't care what the government's doing.
I actually said the same thing to someone yesterday. Same thing. You've got a problem with your income. You need to increase it.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
And people won't understand that. It's good of you talking from where you are. You're clearly on a different level. But I'm like, yeah, but I am where I am because of the stuff I did. Nobody's like gave me a leg up and say, oh, Alfie, here's 100 grand. Go and start whatever. No, I had to grind. I've worked. I saved.
But I think even if someone did, that's a good question. We'll start on this. We'll go back to my original other question I was going to ask. But if someone did give you £100,000, what would you do with it?
Well, right now? There's a few opportunities in front of my face right now. It could go into the property business, buy another property. It could be even me investing back in myself, education-wise, getting access to information to level up. It could go into employing superstars around me to help grow my business, whether it's on the educational side, whether it's on the investment side.
What would you tell your young, that when Alfred was first starting out, what would you tell him to do with that £100,000?
I would do exactly what I did. I started with 25. I saved up to 25 grand. I was fortunate to have 25. I didn't even have 25. I had the thing. So it was a grand for the free day thing, and it was 24 grand. So I had 20 grand in an account. So I emptied that account. And I said, I'll make the remaining 4 grand, and I know I'm going to earn money from work. So I guess the reason I was comfortable, and again, how I sold it to myself is, well, one, I know I'm going to make 25 grand in my lifetime, like over and over and over again. I had a 25K into my degree, which landed me a 40K job, which I could have peaked at 60 grand a year. I'm going to take the bet on myself again, where I'm going to invest 25 grand into this course, which potentially can make millions. And in my case, it's made me money. Like, I can't be more grateful that I even was in a position to have that money to then obviously make the choice to want to invest all of that money into myself. I remember like going home, parents were like, you're crazy. Who did you give your 25 grand to? Go and get it back. Why did you pay for that? And I'm like, guys, like, I'm going to make that money back. I'm going to spend that on holidays. I'm going to spend that going clubbing. I'm going to spend that doing just silly things over my lifetime. So if I can pull that money forward and spend it today, with a chance I could go and acquire information to help me make more, that's a risk I thought was sensible, and at the time I did, and I'm so grateful I did, because I am where I am because of the choice I made.
So self-development, really?
Self-development all the way. Like, I always say, invest in yourself first before you look at investing in like bricks or stocks. And people are worrying about, how do I invest my money? I'm like, this is my rule. If you can't even like save 50 grand, like get to the point where you're saving 2-3 grand a month, I don't care what investment you're looking at, just stop wasting your time. You're wasting your time. Just honestly, just £500, £1,000 is what you can save. Invest every single penny of that penny to upskill yourself, because that you upskilling, investing that money into yourself to get a skill set, you're now more valuable in the marketplace. You can now command a higher income. So these are ways which now allows you to, one, get a higher income, therefore save bigger chunks of money every single month. £500 in the S&P 500, whatever, or index fund, whatever, or property, you're not going anywhere. Like, you're not going to make life-changing money with that kind of money. So rather use that to literally acquire information, upskill yourself, and that allows you to increase your income. And then when you increase your income, you get to a point where you can start saving 2, 3, 4, 5 grand. Like, same 5 grand a month, that's 60 grand a year in savings. So now you can choose to put that money wherever you want to put it. You have the choice. But £500 advising someone to go put it in the stock market or put it in crypto, even if you made 100%, it's only turned from £500 to £1,000. Is that changing your life for the risk you're associated with you trying to make that 100% gain? No, it's not. I would rather invest £500 into learning, leadership, Excel, whatever. Because again,
it could be something so simple as like write a book course, writing a book about your life. It could be anything. So
any, simple. And people, are, just people don't, I just, again, people don't know whether they know. So I don't blame them as well, but I do blame them to the extent of not having that curiosity to want to go and find out how can they do something.
But it comes down to things like social media. And I'm not the greatest. Again, the podcast, people criticize me for it. But I go out there, I'll do it. Because again, I'm in a room with so people like you now. Potentially be going to the other event later on. But it's something I had to do. There was a story, your story, other people's story, my story that's out there now, people are going to benefit from.
Yeah.
But really, your sort of brand, if you like, your social media presence blew up, and it's at your disposal. It's in your hand all of the time. And the same as my business. My business blew up through referrals, my social media presence. So what's your sort of advice? What's your top tips, really, for anyone that's starting out now that's scared in front of a camera? Myself, not necessarily myself, I am scared to do videos. To get started in property or business or with their brand, because if they're your younger self when you first started out, even though you know it has to be done, you're thinking, all right, I'm going to have opinions. I don't necessarily care about the opinions.
Yeah,
but it's this person could be lost. They don't know where they're going.
Yeah, obviously everyone has this fear of recording themselves or whatever. And for me, I've always said, like, the only way you can get comfortable doing something is doing it repeated, like, enough times.
Yeah.
So just, even if you're just going to record it, don't post it, just record. If you keep recording, you just learn over time, you start to improve, you start to feel like, oh, this is all right. I've done this 10 times over, 100 times over. I've always said, like, if you do anything for 2 years, even a year straight of just doing that constant thing, you could have started off rubbish, didn't even know how to do it. In a year's time, you will be at a certain level of expertise. So it's just about being able to, one, commit to doing that thing over a long period of time, which then gets you confident about what it is you're doing. And trust me, even like now, I'm sure I'm going to watch the videos I watch now and cringe and like, damn, I wish I'd done this differently or whatever. Like, I can go back now to my first videos on my Instagram, where I was like behind, like I was shy to get in front of the camera. So I would used to do the property tours behind the camera. So I started off on my phone. I would just be always behind the camera, and you'd hear my voice talking behind the camera. I have no I'm not scared of like talking, so I've always been able to talk. So then it got to a point, like, cool, like I need to now like get in front of the camera. Like, everyone's telling me anything in front of the camera, so I now get my phone. I'm in front of the camera. I'm now starting to speak in front of the camera again. You can see I'm uncomfortable. I'm stuttering. It happens. Like, nobody cares. Like, just do it. And obviously, over time, you start to polish your stuff. Polish the content that's going out. So you start getting, now I have a videographer who follows me around, documenting my journey. So you have to start from somewhere. And I know it's daunting, it's hard, but if you're scared, like I said, just create a content and leave it on your phone and don't post, just to get comfortable. And then now it's about, are you confident enough that you feel like this is okay? And this is a mindset thing. You're never, never, ever going to feel like the content you're about to put out is okay. Like, you, especially if you're comparing to other people, there will always be somebody you can pick up on that could be better. So just get comfortable just putting it out there. And like you said, I think you touched on not caring too much about people's opinions. That's one big thing. If it's constructive criticism, obviously that's great, you want that. But people just kind of say negative things. You want as little negativity in your life as possible. So just stay clear, block, delete, doesn't matter. Don't want to hear from them, block, delete. You're fortunate you can do that, so do that.
I think it's important. That's why if you're going to start posting content, and that's why I will look at social media, Instagram. I don't really use TikTok as much as I should. Facebook, I like the Facebook groups.
Yeah.
But you've got to start with the end in mind, and that's what you should be posting towards, not trying to impress anyone. Because if you start with doing that, you're going to end up with a complete head fuck. If you're going to post and expect lots of likes, comments, that's where it becomes
a bit worse. Forget the likes. Likes don't mean anything. I'm like, for me, I'm more even quantity over quality. Quality over quantity.
Yeah.
Like, and people be surprised. Let's do this. 1,000 loyal followers who do anything you say, i.e. buy whatever product you offer or service you're providing, that could make you hundreds and thousands, even millions. It doesn't, like, if you do the maths on it, it doesn't have to take much to be able to make a significant amount of money just by having a decent just 1,000. And 1,000 is not, it's not even a stretch of imagination. It's very, very easy to build an audience of that size. Obviously, the harder bit is, can you build a loyal fan base or loyal audience base where they start actually spending money with you. So there is reward to getting in front of the camera. And if you're in business or wanting to get into business, I'm sorry, but the truth is you have to be on the socials. This is where everybody gets exposure and this is how people grow. So if you're in a network where, again, you feel like all you know is people around you, social media unlocks that. It helps you find random people across the world, anything. So putting yourself out there, this is what I was big on social. I start to realize, damn, our people reaching out in different countries, across the UK. Some people, like, do you know what I mean? People are reaching out for stuff. So that exposure for me is like limitless. So I'm big on like, yo, I need to be even more. I don't even see myself having a big audience right now. I want to get to the millions in following. Because again, I just know what I can do with that audience. Whether it's providing them a service, product. Like, I'm not just growing following for the sake of following. I don't need a £1 million account just to post pictures and videos. No. I do want to monetize that following, provide them value, and in exchange, they're paying me for my time, for my services, my product, whatever. So yeah, you have to, I think people need to maybe start Googling or YouTubing what do people earn from social media. And you're like some people just making this level of money a month from their just talking rubbish, whether it's football matches, analyzing MMA match, like just all these niches. Some kids analyzing toys, telling them how he thinks about a toy, how does food taste, making thousands a month. And again, the sponsorship deals that come along with growing an audience, having a fan base which watches your content, is limitless, literally. So I think you need to think of that as the opportunity and why you need to convince yourself of getting in front of the camera is a good idea and how it can reward you in the long term.
And I completely agree with you. I mean, I'm like I said, I've got my three kids, two daughters and a 14-week-old boy. Okay. And they'd obviously never watch YouTube. And I just can't believe the amount of views on it. It's like 28 million, 7 yeah. million, 14 million. And I just think, how can people not see that? And I say to my oldest, Billy, she's 8. I go, you're starting a YouTube channel. Get on the YouTube now.
Yeah.
But you see it, like young kids are doing it on YouTube as well. But it's obviously, we're restricting the amount of access. Yeah. But you can monetize it.
100%.
You can. And I think the people that should be doing it, because you can make money from it. People obviously will rip me if we don't talk about your property.
How'd you get in one here? Yeah. Property guy, don't talk.
Let's take a look at the portfolio. We know that obviously you started just after you sort of left your
I got fired.
You got fired.
My contract got terminated onto further notice. I'm like, what does that mean? That's basically me telling me like, oh, we'll let you know when we're ready to hire you again.
Right.
That's not good enough. So, yeah, that's what drove me to go in full time.
So you went on a course. You've done a course.
I done like I'll call it a program instead, because like it was 4 courses, a 6-month mentorship program alongside that, of the networking events that he used to do as well, the calls that he used to do. So there was a lot. It was a lot of offering within a package, I guess, a package program.
Okay. Then what happened after that?
So I actually didn't do anything straight away. So obviously I've just sunk this money. I'm now down to 0.
Yeah,
that was money I was going to potentially put towards a house somewhere, buy my first home. So in my mindset at the time, I was like, I need to make that money back. Like I just invested this stuff. I need to see some return. I need to see something. And the second course that I did something called distressed property, which is about how to utilize space, how to get value out of space, how to add value to land, property, whatever. And the second course was creative finance. For me, it's like that. The creative finance course alone was worth the 25 grand for me. Because that alone made me back the money that I'd spent.
So if anyone was listening, what is creative finance?
Yeah, I'm going to break it down. So creative finance is basically finding ways where you can leverage capital, whether it's through other people's money, whether it's through credit cards, whether it's through loans from banks. So just creatively getting capital for relatively cheap. When I say cheap, I mean low interest rates. So you're not paying too much interest in it. And finding opportunities whereby you can utilize that capital to give you a higher rate than you would pay down the debt, to serve as a debt. So I was like, damn, like credit cards, loans, using other people's money. I'm like, okay, like because I was, there was like ideas flowing through my head. I was like, damn, like I know people that need money. So I used to kind of during uni go out a lot. I went to all the raves, the parties. It was Birmingham. I was everywhere. We
couldn't half imagine shit. You out there, yeah.
Yeah. So like obviously I got to know a lot of promoters. So promoters are people that promote the event. And there was this thing they used to kind of do in the past, we're still doing now, but it's more like festivals now because it's very hard to hire an artist to come perform. The numbers don't stack as much these days. So unless you're doing a festival, that's the only way to kind of make money from artists. So yeah, I know promoters used to bring all the biggest artists and tour them across the cities. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, cool. I know these guys' problem, they need money mm-hmm. to be able to get these artists down, make the event happen. Because they can make the event happen, they've done it several times over. What they're lacking, where I saw myself adding value to these individuals, where if I could find a way to borrow money cheaply, find a promoter that needs money, they do the event. And again, I was never involved in events. I was just the middleman between the person that had the money and the person that could deliver on the event, like time and time again. And yeah, I partnered up with this guy in Coventry, Warwickshire Unis, doing events. So I would go around, and it wasn't huge money at the time. Like most artists at that time, anyway, this is maybe like four years ago, maybe, you can get an artist to perform, a UK artist to perform at, for 10K for the night, and you can make the money back. Like we used to make good money. And that's what, again, it kind of bridged the gap. I learned how to raise money on a smaller level. So 5-10 grand, kind of scaled to about 50 grand for freshers. And that's kind of the end point for me anyways, where I start to exit. So I didn't do anything property wise. What I mean by that is I didn't actually start to buy a property. I was doing viewings. I was still networking. I was getting the right rooms, in the Facebook groups and stuff. Just networking and just learning, absorbing, and trying to implement the stuff. Going on viewings, trying to do appraisals. So when I got to the point where we get to about 50K raise, I'm like, okay, cool. This stuff works. But the events would be great. We made lots of money. I bought my house now. That's psychological things out of my head now. I was so dumb at the time. But I said, yeah, I need to buy a house first and buy the house. So I bought the house. Then now I was like, cool. Let's start the investment game. So I didn't buy anything. So I maybe start the course or the program. It's like a 2-year program as well, by the way. So yeah, 2 years to kind of do the courses and then do any extras. So if you did a course, you can go back and do it again as a repeat. And I didn't buy anything for like maybe even month and a half, 2 years. So my first acquisition was back in February 20. That's not long ago. That's like two and a half years. And we've kind of rapidly scaled through leveraging other people's money. So I created an audience. Again, I started with people closest to me, work colleagues, friends, some family members as well, like cousins who kind of trusted me with their money. And they kind of backed me and I've kind of evolved and just now I kind of get money from strangers who see what work I do through the socials. And want to invest with me, like, yeah, I'm getting 1%, sub 1% in the bank account. He's offering 6-10%, hands off, passive investments, pretty much. They're like, yeah, this is a no brainer. Like, obviously, I've built trust through frequency and showing up every day, showing good and bad. So when things don't go my way, I show it, I document it, and I see how the people see how I recover it. So all this kind of showing, all these things, is building trust over long periods of time. So yeah, we've rapidly scaled with about £4 million in the portfolio at the moment.
So you've raised £4 million or?
No, so I've raised about £4 million in terms of the size of the portfolio so far, properties that I have in the Midlands. And then I've raised just over £2 million now. So yeah, I've been aggressive.
You can't sit.
Yeah.
Do
you know what I mean? It's been a lot of work, a lot of no's, a lot of rejections. It wasn't always like just quickly. Some people are on my sale, but you're fortunate to have people around you that had money. And it wasn't like that. It was just like people around you, people you speak to, people you work with, nobody knows each other's pockets. But if you're portraying yourself as someone that's investing in themselves, one, because again, my biggest selling point was I invested myself. I spent 25 grand into myself. Mm-hmm. So someone sat across the table listening to that. That is an abnormal thing to do. Like nobody in their right mind goes and pays 25 grand to like a program, whatever it is. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, it comes back to if you're trying to raise money off of someone, again, all your top tips. What are your top tips for raising money off of someone? Or how do you raise money off of someone else? Then if you've not invested in yourself, how can you expect someone else to loan you any money, whether it be £1 or £1 million or £100,000? Yeah. So you've got to invest it in yourself, I believe, number one. because you've got to have the knowledge to know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a builder. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
You've got to know how to analyze deals, how to appraise a deal, how to do everything, how to manage the money.
Yeah.
How to manage builders, really.
Yeah.
That's a whole different podcast, that is. But you've got to have some form of education around what you're trying to raise the capital for.
Yeah, because that's what you use to leverage, bridging the gap. So people kind of think, oh, we need experience. Experience is what's going to get us the money. I'm like, listen, I have experience, in my opinion, and there's still people that are like, oh, no, for not for me. So get over that, you need experience. The easiest bridge is having knowledge, showing that you're someone that's going to overcome problems. These are the investable skills you're going to be positioning yourself to someone you're speaking to, and that's what's going to attract them. So like the whole saying of people need to know, like, and trust you.
Yeah.
Most of your friends know, they like you, that's what your friends. And hopefully if you're really close, they trust you. So they're your easiest finance raise. Like I didn't go to strangers at the beginning. I went to people that knew me, people that like I worked with all the time. We spoke, we had lunch together. We chill, even outside of work, we chill together. Mm-hmm. They borrow me money, even till this day, they still borrow me money. Like I've had an investor who was my first ever investor. She's from work. She's invested with me from when I did events to property, now looking at buying businesses. So like she's made a lot of money through me, like just throwing money at me and saying, yeah, if I don't need the money, use it, do we need to do enough to pay back my interest, whatever, pay back my capital, not a problem. And we just built a relationship over time. And she probably will be an investor forever, to be honest. Like just,
and I think that's what a lot of people misunderstand, is that it's been done over time. It's brick by brick. It's not just I'm gonna buy a house, borrow money, and then buy another house. It's been done brick at a time. Slowly and steady, and it sounds aggressive. I've raised £2 million, and it's a £4 million portfolio. But you've got to listen to the backstory and what's gone into that. You've built a brand, and that's the most important thing. That is, people know you, they like you, they trust you. They've listened to your story.
Yeah,
you've grafted, which is the main thing, and people
I'm still grafting.
But what I mean is, people can see that you've grafted.
Yeah,
that's why they're willing to loan that money.
Yes.
And again, people will want to joint venture with you.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's something that you do. And if people were looking to do that, do joint ventures. What's your advice around joint ventures? Not necessarily with yourself, but
developers. I personally haven't done any joint ventures. Everything's been on a debt base, so loan facility, and a fixed return from 6-10%. What I do say is, again, the reason, and I guess I can speak from my position. The reason why I haven't done any joint ventures and still won't probably do joint ventures on these type of deals is I don't feel like the opportunity is big enough to even want to joint venture on, because I have no fear of there's lack of capital. So usually what happens, people do joint ventures because they feel like they can't raise capital and therefore don't want to partner up with someone to do the deal. But my thing is, I've got long, long, big plans. This is what I've done so far to this stage, absolutely nothing. To the outside world, it might look like amazing stuff, but for me, this is like a foundation level, like this is phase one of property. So I don't want any financial links or complications in the future, because partnerships are all great. And if I'm going to do it for a joint venture opportunity, it needs to be a £100 million plan. If it's not, I'm not interested. I can do that with myself. I don't need, I have the resource. I can outsource work, whatever. I'm in a place where I have enough value to be able to create something of that value by myself. And not to kind of say, arrogantly say, I don't need you kind of thing, but it's not that. It's more the complications that come with joint venture partnerships. If I'm gonna go in partnership with someone, there's a lot. It's not just about what you bring to the table, just how you react to certain things. When things are bad, how are you? I don't even wanna talk about the good things, because when good is good, we don't even talk about the good things.
Yeah, 100%.
When things go sour is where you see a different character of someone. So. Yeah. For example, I'm a quick decision maker. I don't need to know 10,000 information to make a decision. I can know half of that information to make a decision. But my partner might be someone I need to know everything. We're not going to work. Because unless there's autonomy where I can do what it is I want, and you're just a silent investor or a silent partner, then that's fine. I'm fully in control. So there's a lot. And just even like the horizon, like I'm always thinking long term. If I'm doing something, there's always a bigger play to it. So a partnership, 2 years, even, don't forget, even a year, even 6 months. A lot can happen within 6 months. You could have started as like, we're going to build this empire, blah, 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 and something happens in your life. You're like, damn, I can't do this anymore. I didn't think it was going to be like this, whatever. Things have changed. now trying to break loose of that is like a marriage. It's literally it's,
yes, mate. It really is. It's tough. So it's, anyone wants to do joint ventures,
the advice here is don't. I'm not trying to put people off joint ventures. I think it's just get very clear on how you settle things when things go left.
No, I completely agree.
Write it down on paper, get it signed, both parties. What, i.e., you bought property together. You were planning to hold it for however long you were to hold it for. The person now wants to release their equity share out of that, but you haven't got the capital to pay that money back. What do you do in that event? Because you don't want to sell the asset because it's a great asset, it's providing your cash flow. The other person needs the capital back because they want to go and do something else. They're not interested in this no more. They want to exit this vehicle, but you don't have the capital to buy them out. Literally, what is the resolution in that point? If you've written it down, all you're doing is refer back to the document. If you haven't written it down, that's where it gets nasty. That's where the dispute starts to happen.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, just get very clear on how you handle things when things are negative and things are going wrong. Or there's some sort of obstacle. How do you guys handle that? And if you're happy with that, proceed to do joint ventures.
And then it comes back to obviously being very clear and having clarity on where you want to go.
Yes.
Whether you want to be having your own portfolio, or is it a quick flip, or whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah.
You might be wanting to do rent to rent, which is a high cash flowing strategy.
Yeah.
But then very quickly, you've won Property Investor of the Year. that's absolute madness.
I think that's all come about because I was heavily documenting and aggressively scaling. I was doing one project, finishing the next project. And just to put it into context as well, like, I don't want to make it sound easy. So I do something called HMO, so houses of multiple occupation, which is in layman's terms, a house share. So you buy a house, we convert them into multiple units. We have, might have 6, 7, 8 tenants sharing a facility, sharing the house. And I was just big on just doing, documenting what it is I was doing. I was doing Instagram lives, engaging an audience, sharing a lot of value from my YouTube, from my Instagram. So a lot of like outreach was just happening in several ways, podcast interviews, all that stuff. So I got a lot of attention. So when it came to me, obviously applying and going through the whole process, they're judging all of that, not just what you've done as well, but your impact on society, how you're inspiring others to be able to think that, okay, this is possible, it's doable, because you've done it before. So yeah, a lot has happened in a very short space of time, for sure. Like I said, it's just for me, this is like a beginning to do more. Like I'm this is my foundation. This is why, again, I had that vision of I need to create a foundation, a stable foundation where there's no one else involved, just me, Alfred, and that's it. And so whatever happens, I can always fall back on this. Like I can dream big. I can go and try and attempt to build something in the billion. It doesn't work out, I've still got this portfolio. I don't need, my life isn't going to change just yet. Like now it's like, I'm at a point where, for example, $2,000, another HMO project that I'll do where it takes about 8 months, again, just to kind of make the point, from start to finish, from up again accepted, you're hemorrhaging cash, whether it's solicitor fees, architects, planning, the whole refurbishment. My average refurb is like $100,000. So I might put in 130 before I start to see my net profit of $2,000 a month or 1,005 a month on low end from this property. So again, are people patient enough to kind of wait to see that happen? A lot of people won't do that. And this is probably what society is as well. People aren't willing to play the long game in terms of putting the graph for that level of time to start seeing the results. People kind of want the money tomorrow. Like,
another thing a lot of people don't realize is that they're buying a house, and when they put it back to brick or they're doing a refurb, they're devaluing the house of what it's actually worth.
Yeah.
And then they've got to think, oh shit, I bought it for 200, now it's worth 150.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got to spend 100 on it.
Yeah,
to get
yeah.
it back, or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this is cost, like you say, planning, architect, whatever it might be, yeah. building control.
Yeah.
Absolute nightmare. But you've got all these fees that are adding up, and if it's your first one, that's scary.
It is, and I'm an example. My first deal was a HMO deal, so I went back to brick. I've never done a conversion in my life, but again, core principles came from my corporate world.
Yeah.
I worked in the Jaguar Land Rover. We developed the four-cylinder engine that goes in the Evoques, the XE, XFs on the Jag side. So this engine, this project was a $200 million project to develop this engine. This is their first in-house, because they used to buy engines from Ford and put into the vehicles. Now they decided to make their own engines, create their manufacturing plants. So what did they go and do? They went and hired expert people that can deliver on the product. So what do I do when I screw my business? I want to go and find expert people that can go and deliver the product I want. So even when the bank is asking for experience, this company, this construction company who's done 20, 30 HMOs in this area time and time again, this is the level of quality of what they do. I'm hiring the best to make my life easy. I don't mind paying the premium to get the right service and de-risk what it is I'm getting into. I want to be able to get in and out without any problems. That's the game. Yeah. Get in and out without any problems. So you want to find the best, pay their worth. Obviously, they all need to support the numbers. Don't get me wrong. If the numbers are too astronomical, you might find ways to try and save money. But I always feel like I'd rather have a lesser profit if I can secure a better like project on the back end, as opposed to trying and I can save $5,000 here by going around and again, spending time. People want to spend time trying to do this and do that. I'm like, for me, the value add I bring to the table is finding new opportunities and raising finance. I don't want to do any other thing else because those are low value skills. I can pay someone to do that thing. I can outsource that work. So for me, what's going to bring money to the table? Finding a new deal, new opportunity to get myself involved in, for my team to then go and deliver. Because everything, I don't do anything. My team do the rest. Mm. Architect does the drawings. We have a conversation on what we intend to make the property. I can share my view of what I think is possible. He will tell me what's realistic, what's possible. My build team are going to convert the building from whatever it is based on the floor plans and convert the building. Building control, sign off the work. That's how I'm marking the homework of the build team. So there's a level of like structure with what I'm doing, and I'm not just kind of winging it. And I didn't just come up with this stuff by myself. I went and networked to see what the hell people do. How do they buy a house? How do they fund it? How do they take it from this 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom house to a 5, 6, 7, 8-bedroom house? What's the process look like? What does the team look like? And I went and replicated what worked. Mm. There is no genius that is madness.
No, there isn't. And no, I completely agree. And we've got to touch on the business side just quickly.
Yeah.
I know that you've got to shoot off. But now that you've got your portfolio,
yeah,
now it's on to the next level, taking things up to the next level. Yeah. You briefly touched on, you met Grant Cardone, which I would imagine was like insane. Completely
priceless.
Insane. Yeah.
Priceless.
$25,000 for 2 days.
Yeah.
Which I would imagine inspired you to think completely differently about business.
Man, I just, it's that when 2022, best experience of my entire life so far. Like I could have never been exposed to so much wealth in such a short space of time. Like so many things happened. Like the people in the room, the level of businesses that they were involved in. There's one guy, he had 20 million in a Morgan Stanley account. He earned 7.5 million a year. I can remember the numbers so vividly. Like I literally did this because he was sorry, I really lost him. Because I was sat next to him. It was six of us. We went after the drinks, the first night for introductories, like six of us kind of got together. I went for dinner and he was to my left. We're just having chats. We're just talking business, normal. Well, we didn't really get into any nitty gritty. So obviously during the mastermind, we did introductions. Even that weekend, he wrote a check for £1 million to go into Cardone Capital, which if you guys don't know, is a fund which Grant Cardone has. So yeah, he wrote a check from straight up front, kept check there. Then he also signed up with Brandon Dawson's All In Leadership Program, which is $400,000. So he spent $1.4 million that weekend. Forget the weekend. The weekend sounds long. Day and a half, which is insane because it shows the level of wealth the guy has and how much money he has around him. Very easy, can access it and utilize, and has no fear of spending that money. So all these things were like, I'm like, damn, people are just dropping. The lawyer sat next to me. She's currently doing about, which is doing about 10 million in the business. She was talking about how she wants to scale her lawyer firm to about 50 million. And obviously, again, so the room was all business related. Brandon Dawson's a business expert. He sold his business for 110 million. And he's now teaching others how to scale, grow their business. And the guy's a wizard, man. So even her, she dropped $400,000 again. No payment plan. I'm all in. And again, it just shows me how committed people can get. Like when they're really committed on their dream, their ambition, whatever it is they're trying to achieve, they're like, we're all in. We don't need to, like, especially if they're in a place where they've got it. Even if they have to, there was a guy in the room, like he invested everything into this, and he's grown his business. It's worked for him. And I feel like people that kind of go all in, find a way to make it happen.
Yeah.
But man, the idea is Grant, his personal goals and why he even created a mastermind. His goal behind the mastermind is he's looking for $1 billion opportunities. He's not interested in 100 millions. He's like, I already have that. My education business does 120 million a year. My Cardone Capital, I've got 5 billion in real estate. That brings in hundreds of million a year. So it's like the only reason why he's doing this is to find partnerships. Partnerships whereby they're all $1 billion industries. And even if you look at what he's done, again, I'm very curious. I'm trying to work out what's happening. Look at Brandon Dawson partnership. Him and Brandon Dawson own Cardone Ventures. that alone will be a $1 billion company by just as an entity by itself. 10x Health, just $1 billion easily, like not a problem. Everyone needs health. They're selling the whole business entrepreneurship, looking after their health, well-being. He has a whole database of business owners. They all need it. So if he just holds, he has a database of 3.something million. So if he just sold to even that database alone, that's already in hundreds of millions. So, and it's only going to grow and grow and grow. The educational business, they're scaling every year. They keep increasing the targets, keep evolving. And like, just listening to that stuff, you're like, damn, these guys are like, don't even need to be in this room. Like they could be somewhere just chilling, but they're still on this hamster wheel grinding, got big ambitions, want to impact the world, want to do more, want to get in the right rooms. And for me, I was like, damn, I thought big, but I knew like these guys thought big, but like being in the room, physical, having a joke with Grant Cardone, drinking, playing game, like there's nothing, hard to explain what that experience feels like, but it was priceless. Like it could have been 50 grand, it could have been 100 grand. Easily, like for me, it was a priceless experience because I can't think how I think now based on that, just being in that room with these guys.
That's absolutely mad.
Yeah.
But you should be absolutely super proud of where you are now.
I am, for sure.
You should be super proud. And I would imagine all of your family are as well.
Yeah, they are.
And have you got anything else to leave the viewers with? Any top tips, anything you'd give as say, right, this is what I would advise you to, not advise, but this is what I'd recommend you guys do if you're starting out?
Yeah, I feel like get exposure, man. That's, I've told you my environment, people didn't even know this, but that's where I've come from. And what changed, I got into new rooms. I put myself in new uncomfortable situations where I had to spend money to get in the room, fine, is what it is. I'm trying to find new opportunities. I'm trying to find new answers. I'm trying to find new information.
Yeah.
So getting exposure for me was everything. It just widened my mind of what's possible, what can be done with the right level of information, with the right level of support, network. So yeah, if you're aspiring to be a property investor, you don't know how to get into property, start getting in rooms with the property investors who are talking about investing in property. You're going to start learning. Like, people want to find out everything from making a move. You can't. That's not how it works. You just got to start, and the path will just light up. It's like you'll start to navigate some way somehow. Just trust me. Just commit to the thing that is you're trying to do, and just start. Just the main thing people fail to do is just start and go long enough. Some people quit too early. This is not how it's not working out. I'm like, look, 8 months to see £2,000 after spending £100,000 into the property. Do you know what I mean? And obviously, some people aren't caught up for that. But you got to find out what works for you. And that only comes through exposure, in my opinion, to know what's out there, what's possible. And therefore, okay, this is something I feel like with my skill set I can run with, and therefore have the self-belief and conviction I can go and do it. And then just stick to that. And then secondly, once you know that, stay narrow focused. The reason why I'm where I am, an attribute, is because I have not deviated, not looked at my crypto friends who are making money, not looked at my e-commerce friends who are making money on there, not looked at people in the M&A space buying businesses, making money there too, or stocks and shares, whatever. There's so many ways to make money in this day and age. So like, but you can get distracted and have diluted efforts by trying to be the stocks guy, be the property guy, be the crypto guy, be the guy looking at him, like, just there's a time and place for everything. Get to a certain stage. I say make a million, whether it's revenue, profit, whatever, set a target. And then when you feel like, okay, you're in a great place, you want to look at other things, mate, you can start even chucking, this is not financial advice. You can start honestly chucking money at things because you're like, it doesn't matter. I have this foundation here that brings money every single month without fail. Whether I sleep, do nothing, money's coming in. That's a great position to be in. You can take as many risks as you want at that point.
That's fantastic. It's not advice, not financial advice. So anyone says that. But learn to say no. I think that's so key. Learn to say no. And yeah, if people get annoyed with that, then fuck them off. In my opinion, just get rid of them, because you don't need to be doing crypto, stocks and shares, property.
You don't.
Unless you've, like you said, you've got a foundation that's already set, but then not necessarily not going to be listening to this podcast, you wouldn't be worrying about your income. Yes, that's what I'll be saying. Yeah. So like you say, you could chuck it. You could chuck it, all different types of things. You could have your stocks, have your shares, you could have your crypto, for whatever it is that everyone else does.
Yeah.
It's not me. I'm one or two things and that's me done.
Yeah.
If I don't understand it, I won't invest in it.
Exactly.
That's the way I am.
Yeah.
But where else can people find you? I know you've got all your social media channels, but you've got program as well and a community that people can follow you on.
Yeah, yeah. So I created, obviously based on what I've done so far, people want to learn what it is I do. So I created this mastermind group where I'm there 24/7 in terms of access point, questions, answers, having a weekly Zoom calls and stuff to kind of build a community around people who are looking to invest in property, learn to raise finance, to structure deals. I'm even more transparent. I'm transparent first as it is, but we can get into like gritty details like in the masterminds, because I can open documents up, go through floor plans, talk about it, go through valuation packs. What valuation I've got on my latest project, like all these kind of things I kind of share more in the close community because they're paying to have access to that information or have access to me and my network, my knowledge, whatever. And that's called Real Property Ventures. You can go on the website, www.realpropertyventures.co.uk. And that's kind of the mastermind group offering I have at the moment. And obviously socials, just my name, Alfred Jade. You can pretty much find me on all platforms, pretty much.
Alfred, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.